Hello again, you're listening to The Business. Conor Brophy in for George this week. You can contact us, remember, by text 51551, by phone at 1850 715 150. You can email The Business at RTE or tweet at The Business RTE. Now, just before the break, we heard about the influential Irish women down through the years in the labour movement. But what's the workplace like for women in 2014? This week, there were some positive figures released relating to female directors in companies. According to VisionNet, the numbers have doubled in the past 10 years. But other research points to discrimination in terms of pay, positions on boards and in senior management, and problems around maternity leave. We're joined by Louise Campbell, Managing Director of Robert Walters Recruitment, Media and Management Consultant Orla Carmody, and Sandra Hart, Director of European Affairs for Business Networking International. Louise, if I could come to you first, your Managing Director. Was your ascension to the Oak Panel's boardroom accompanied by the sound of breaking glass? Was there a glass ceiling in your experience?
I think I'm very lucky to be working in an industry that is very much based on merit. It's an industry which is, I think, probably about 50-50 when it comes to men and women working in it. So I'm very lucky. I've never really experienced a glass ceiling.
In terms of people then that you would refer for jobs, does that come up? I mean, I know you'd obviously be very gender balanced in terms of the candidates you're presenting,
sure.
But the statistics would tend to show that particularly for senior positions, employers are tending to favour men over women by quite an alarming margin.
To be honest, I don't see that very much at all. When a client comes to us and is looking for somebody to fill a particular position, it's very much a need to fill a particular position. I don't think ever have had a conversation with a client where they've said, I need to have a man, I need it to be a woman. Hey, there's 9 guys in here, you know, if you want this new candidate to work out, if I were you, can you please just send me men? It just doesn't happen. I think, you know, there is such a shortage of
skills. You wouldn't want to be
explicit
about that, though, at the same time, would you, in terms of the legal ramifications?
It would tend
to be more subtle, wouldn't
it? It would be more subtle. And sometimes you might get an idea if you send a short list of candidates and a client comes back and says, OK, well, I'll interview the 2 men and the 4 women I won't interview. However, saying that, as I said, it rarely happens. It rarely happens.
You're a member of a couple of boards yourself, Orla, and I don't see shards of glass in your hair. Has there been one in your experience?
No, and I mean, I would agree with Louise, because one of the companies that I'm a director of is HRM Recruit. It's a recruitment industry like Louise's, and yes, it's very egalitarian and has always been. There's always been a very good representation of women in it, and I think it's because it's an industry that's predicated very much on EQ that we're hearing so much about lately, emotional intelligence, and it's about sussing out a candidate and making sure that they match with the correct role. And it's about long-term relationships. It's about placing this candidate now, and maybe in 5 years' time or 10 years' time, placing them again. And that's all about relationship building. And I would say that women are instinctively very good at that and always have been. And maybe that's why it works. But we do hear a lot about the glass ceiling lately, and are we breaking it? And in my view, it's less of a glass ceiling and more of a glass cliff. If you look at the corporate sector particularly, women figure up to 51, 52, 55% up to middle management level. And equally, we figure at those levels in education. Women perform terribly well in academic life, as we know. So all the way along, we're level pegging up to middle management level. And then we fall off the cliff. We fall from the 55% down to about 15% at senior management level and down to about 3% at CEO level. And that's still the case. And it's right across the Western world. And that's the piece we have to work on in the sense of getting the corporate space more flexible, more family friendly, more aware of women as a fabulous resource that needs to be retained. But you know what? I think the corporate sector is waking up to this. I think they're suddenly realising, you know, women are a fabulous resource. You put extraordinary amounts of money into training them. Why are you letting them walk out the door in their mid-30s because they now have family issues? And we have to look at it. But the business case is the thing that this will all hang on. You know, there are all kinds of studies coming out from Catalyst and Davies and Forbes and all of these wonderful international organisations that say that the higher number of women there are on boards and in senior management in a company, the better that company will perform. And that's the business case.
Exactly.
It's not
it
warm and fuzzy stuff.
Sense.
It's about make business sense. Exactly, Louise.
And Sandra, that's a very, very easy point you would think to be able to make, isn't it? Surely the more diverse the pool of talent from which you draw, the better your business is going to be for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, women make such great employees, make such great people on boards. Like for myself, I'm actually on the board, the international board of BNI, and there's 8 people on that, 3 of whom are women. So, you know, really we're looking at skill sets, we're looking at people who can do a job. We're not necessarily looking at, you know, what the situation is with chromosomes and whatever else. You know, it's really about who can do that job. And we're seeing it more in business
and
as well.
And all the statistics show, I mean, if you look at companies that do well, technology companies in particular, perhaps because so many of them are so relatively new, Google has a high representation of both women and minorities on its board. Facebook, famously, their chief operating officer, Sheryl Sandberg, Marissa Mayer is the chief executive of Yahoo. Mm-hmm. And you can list off many of the others. In fact, I think all of the Forbes or the top, the Fortune 500 companies that have women as chief executive or in senior management positions are in that one particular sector, but they're all companies that are doing very well.
Yes, and we're seeing lots more and more women both going into business and growing their businesses. And there's a bit of a difference really between necessarily an entrepreneur and a person who is self-employed and someone who is a business owner. And I think that's where the primary sort of difference is, in the sense that, you know, somebody who is a person who the business depends on them for sort of going forward and stuff like that. Someone who's an entrepreneur who's maybe on their own a business needs to look at collaboration and stuff like that. Whereas people who are business owners, or a woman who is a business owner, you know, the processes and the skills and the stuff that's happening around her in her business sort of goes on whether necessarily she's there or not, whether she's out getting sales or, you know, she's out getting business, or whether she's dealing with family issues. Mm.
Louise, when Orla mentioned the glass cliff there, it does seem that you talk about the reasons why women get to X point and then find themselves, you know, progressing thus far and no further. Mm. Family is the one issue that's brought up. Why should family be an issue that only seems to stop women advancing?
Well, we were actually discussing this earlier on. You know, we were saying the day, I think, when men get the same paternity leave as a woman, maybe when maternity leave is split 3 months for the woman, 3 months for the men. And apparently it works very well. When it is seen as a norm for when children are sick, for, you know, the father to rush out of work at 2 o'clock in the afternoon saying, "I'm off, my child's got meningitis or measles or whatever it might be." When it, you know, when that becomes, I think, acceptable in the workplace. Right now, you know, even though people might be very accepting of, you know, working mothers in the workplace, until there is true equality and until, you know, there is that ability for fathers to be able to take that time, I think that it is always that, you know, the responsibility is going to lie with.
But if you talk about acceptability, then I suppose the wider question is, then why is it acceptable or accepted to such a great extent that to get to the top you have to work 15, 16 hour days which are inherently going to be destructive to any idea?
Well, I think that's becoming quite an outdated idea as well. I think, you know, the smarter organisations are the ones that are focusing on productivity and output, and people are realising that, you know, working an 80 hour week is not necessarily the key to success. Because, you know, especially through the economic recession that we've had, there has been huge burnout of employees. And I think that people are realising it's all about working smarter and not necessarily working harder and putting in the long hours.
I'd agree with that. Absolutely, Louise. Yeah, I think that I go in and out of an awful lot of companies, both the corporate side and the micro businesses, the SME sector, in terms of my own training and development work. And we're looking at a sort of a whole style of leadership that's emerging now. And it's all about authentic leadership. It's about the full 360 person. It's about acknowledging that we're not just people who go in and do a day's work. We all have lives and families and outside interests, and we're trying to, work-life balance is becoming such a huge thing. But again, back to sort of the bottom line, not to get too warm and fuzzy about business, but the bottom line for a business, be it a small business, be it a larger corporate, it improves when staff are happy, comfortable in their work and content with what they're doing. And the way we do this is a number of ways. We give back as company owners and managers. We need to give back to our staff in terms of training and development and letting them know that they're appreciated. And the other way we have to give back is in terms of flexibility. But interestingly, when you look at the male-female gender balance thing, if you put teams working, for example, like the apprentice programme we all were aware of, and you saw these teams on these tasks, if you put, and all the science is around this, if you put a male team on a task, put a female team on a task, and put a mixed gender team on a task, the mixed gender team will win the task. Mm. And it's not rocket science, really, although, as I said, there is some science around it. The bottom line is men and women like each other. Mm. We like working together. Yeah. We perform better when we're probably competing a little and showing off a little with somebody of the opposite sex. But, you know, put together a team like that and we all bring our skills to the table and the task will be performed much better. Mm. And that's the big argument, again, for gender diversity in the workplace and the broader spectrum of diversity, every kind of diversity in the workplace. We will actually perform better as teams and the bottom line will increase.
And Sandra, that's something I'm sure you'd see all the time at BNI. Men and women work in different ways. We are the different.
Yeah, we work in totally different ways. In fact, there was a really interesting book written called Business Networking and Sex, Not What You Think. And it's all about how genders network differently. And basically there's sort of like a networking disconnect, if you like, or the way that people do business. Let's say men, women and women will network differently with each other than men and men. And where the disconnect happens is where women and men are networking with each other. And what happens necessarily is women tend to be relationship first, business second. Men tend to be business first, relationship second. And what happens then is basically that women think that maybe men are bragging or they're sort of hunting for business and they're just focused on business and they don't necessarily care about me. And women think that, or men think then that women are maybe soft or they're sort of not as serious about their business as men.
But you put those together, then you get the relationship and then you get the sale as well.
Mm. Exactly. And what happens mostly is that in this disconnect, men lose out because women, if you look at it in Ireland, make, I think it's something like 85% of the purchasing decisions, where they might not purchase all of the things themselves. They actually have a huge influence on the purchasing decisions. And so necessarily men are actually losing out mostly because they're not necessarily dealing with women consumers as much.
In terms of solutions then, we haven't yet got to gender quotas. Is anyone in favour of them or anyone think it might be a good idea?
I think we kind of need quotas with a horizon. I think we need to level the playing field and we need to get to a place where we have quotas, but then we remove them again because things have worked out. Sometimes you hear...
Because the threat of a quota or the introduction of mandatory quotas in itself could be productive, you might think.
It could be, but there's a lot of... People can be threatened about quotas. If an article is written about quotas, go online to one of these board sites or whatever and look at the reaction. You'll get an awful lot of reaction from men who are quite threatened by it. And it's not about being threatened. If there's equality in society, it's better for everybody. And if there's equality in the workplace, it's actually better for everybody. But the quotas thing is very interesting. You sometimes see a very high profile woman who has just been appointed chief executive of a company or appointed onto a board. And the first thing she'll come out and say is, I don't believe in quotas. I got here all by myself. Yeah. And I always think, oh,
pulling up the ladder, yeah.
Don't say that.
But
we
nobody
have to
wants
look
to
at
think
quotas.
That they got there because they're a woman. Nobody wants to be the token woman who's been, you know, taken out of obscurity and plucked into a big job.
As the token man in the studio now, unfortunately. We're just about out of time, so I'll have to wrap it up there. But thanks very much, Orla, Sandra and Louise, for coming into us this morning. Now,
thanks,
and
Connor.
Thank you, Connor.